from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Friday, March the 7th, 2025. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Ask anybody, they'll tell you. I have witnesses placed all over this great land of ours. And since I'm feeling kind of punchy today, and you should be too, going into the weekend, for crying out loud, I'm going to do something I haven't done here in, probably a couple of years. We are going to play right now, right here. Here it is. See, it's already started. The long version of our Hawaiian Shirt Friday fight song. Sing it loud and sing it proud. And you gotta love those lyrics. Oh, it's got soul. And here we go to the Dixieland Hawaiian music. You won't get that anywhere else, my friend, I guarantee you. Grand finale. Here we go, kids. Love that steel guitar. There you go. Truly the sweetest sound this side of heaven. Consider Hawaiian Shirt Friday as officially launched, my friend. Now, let's get the blogcast launched with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or naga nuggets. You get to make the call. Good one. It says, a friend is someone that won't begin to talk behind your back when you leave the room. That's right. And a politician is someone who'll stab you in the back when you enter the room.
Don't look now, but there's one man too many in this room, and I think it's you.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do this.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, boy.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Hope you're ready.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, like that's ever going to happen. All righty, kids, it was on this day in 1876... Alexander Graham Bell was granted a patent for an invention he called the telephone. You know, where he got that idea, you know, using that name, how he came up with that name is anybody's guess, but it was a good choice. Still with us today. What amazes me most is that he was a dead ringer for, pardon the term, dead ringer, for actor Don Ameche. And it was on this, you would have had to seen the movie. All right. It was on this day in 2007, the British House of Commons voted to make the upper chamber, the House of Lords, 100% elected. Oh, there was a method to their madness. You see, now, whenever the House of Lords is criticized, they can blame it on the voters.
Alert the troops.
Former mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, passed away. I guess it was around 5:30 Wednesday morning. He was... in attendance for Donald Trump's big speech Tuesday night. And apparently during the speech, he had to be taken to a hospital. He was checked out of the hospital and sent home and passed away around 5:30 in the morning. He was a two-term mayor of Houston. I know most Houstonians remember him, and they remember him as a career politician. In fact, he had run for Houston mayor back in, was that the 1990s? 1980s? Something like that. Well, don't quote me on that. But yeah, he was a career Democrat politician, and as a Democrat, he was okay. He was a moderate Democrat. You don't see a lot of them anymore. In fact, they're dying off. The Democrats of today are the people that you witnessed during that speech Tuesday night. They're not all, but the great majority of them, probably 95% of them, are the political retrobates that you saw Tuesday night. And that was not Sylvester Turner. I don't want to say that I got to know him. I didn't know him very well, but I had him on my radio show in Houston a number of times during his 8 years as mayor. He would come in every year and promote the big Freedom Over Texas event, which is a 4th of July celebration along the banks of Buffalo Bayou in Houston. They have a couple of music stages down there, and it was an event that would start late in the morning of July 4th and go all the way to the late evening, and it would always climax with a huge, one of the nation's largest fireworks displays. And Turner was a real promoter of those events like that. Houston International Festival, that was another big event that he would like to promote. And he was a likable guy. Yeah, he was a Democrat, but he was a moderate Democrat. He was the kind of a guy that you could sit down with and share a couple of beers and just talk. And the talk would always be very civil. He also helped promote the Houston Rodeo. Big event. My gosh, world's largest rodeo. Huge event. And he would be there. And I don't know how he was able to budget all that time that he spent with us, but he would be there. And a great supporter of Houston. He really loved Houston. So he passes away at the age of 70. One of the rumors I had heard was that he had pancreatic cancer, but apparently it was bone cancer. And he'd been fighting it for quite some time. I don't know. Being on this end of 70, I tell people I'm approaching 70 and I just don't tell them from which direction. But, being this far into my 70s now, I look at 70 years old as just, wow, that's too early to go. But if you're ready, then you're okay. I was particularly impressed with the fact that Turner just basically kept his illness under wraps. He didn't talk about it, didn't dwell on it, and he kept showing up. He showed up for Tuesday night's big speech. But again, he was a moderate Democrat. And, I hate to say this, but yeah, that's a dying breed. Moderate Democrats. They've been replaced by radicals. And I was going to say young radicals, but not really. There's a lot of old radicals. There are a lot of old radicals in that bunch. Nancy Pelosi being one of them. It was just, I had a lot of fun watching her stewing in her own hatred in that chair the other night when Donald Trump was speaking. She didn't have a copy of his speech to tear up, and I think that was tearing her up. But as far as Sylvester Turner was concerned, idealistically, I didn't have a lot in common with him. Not that that mattered. But he still showed up and did his job. He promoted Houston. He was a great promoter of Houston. And, there were rumors of corruption. But show me a politician who's not corrupt, and I'll show you a poor politician. Then again, Sylvester wasn't rich. He was doing okay. He was comfortable. But he wasn't rich. And he never became a big-time politician. I think probably the biggest position he held was the one he was holding when he died. He had slipped in there and had been elected to Sheila Jackson Lee's old seat because she passed away last year from pancreatic cancer. So he slipped right on in there and was looking after his constituents because that's what he did. As mayor, oh my gosh, we've had better mayors, and I'm an old-time Houstonian. When I think about Houston's good mayors, I can only think of two really great mayors that we had. Louis Welch, who served from 1964 to 1974, and he was a Republican. and Bob Lanier, who served in during the 1990s, the late 90s. Good man. Other mayors in Houston, we've had them from really bad to pretty good. And I would have to say that Sylvester Turner was pretty good as a mayor. He did things like worked on police reform, constructive police reform, not the radical leftist. And he was also concerned about shoring up Houston's budget, although he was known for spending money, too. So he's both guilty and innocent in that regard when it came to Houston's purse strings. But our current mayor in Houston, I don't live in Houston anymore. I haven't lived in Houston in, 25 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. But Houston's current mayor, John Whitmire, described Turner as a remarkable public servant. You know, and say what you want about Sylvester Turner. I personally always found him to be a very likable guy. Somewhere in my cell phone, I have a selfie that I took with the two of us. He was always a good-natured man. When it came to promoting Houston, he did a great job. And no matter where you stand politically, if you stand with me politically, yeah, you didn't agree with the guy, but you didn't hate him either. He was just a damned likable guy. And to Sylvester Turner, who just passed away at age 70, I just have to say, rest in peace. Our president sent a warning to Hamas to release all of the hostages and the dead bodies of those murdered by Hamas. And quoting him, he said, "This is your last warning. For the leadership, now is the time to leave Gaza while you still have a chance. I sure hope they don't make the mistake of ignoring him." He added, "Release the hostages now or there'll be hell to pay later." I don't think that's a warning. I think that's probably a promise. Here's how he posted it on his Truth Social. "Shalom Hamas means hello and goodbye. You can choose. Release all of the hostages now, not later, and immediately return all of the dead bodies of the people you murdered, or it's over for you. Only sick and twisted people keep bodies, and you're sick and twisted. I'm sending Israel everything it needs to finish the job. Not a single Hamas member will be safe if you don't do as I say. I've just met with your former hostages whose lives you have destroyed. This is your last warning. For the leadership, now's the time to leave Gaza while you still have a chance. Also to the people of Gaza, a beautiful future awaits, but not if you hold hostages. If you do, you are dead. Make a smart decision. Release the hostages now, or they'll be hell to pay later." Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. That's how he put it on Truth Social. I would imagine it would be a good idea for them to take him at his word. Yesterday, I saw some photos of Gaza and how it looks right now, and it is not pretty. That's about as much destruction as I've ever seen in any one place. Remember what Beirut, Lebanon looked like back in the 90s, in the early 90s? That's pretty much what we're looking at. And Arab leaders have endorsed a $53 billion Gaza post-war plan, one that would allow its residents to remain in response to Trump's plan to relocate them while the United States redeveloped it as a Riviera of the Middle East, kind of a resort area. Well, at a summit hosted by Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Yeah, he's still in office. He seems to be a pretty good guy. Egypt, which has mediated Gaza ceasefire talks between Israel and Hamas with Qatar and the United States, came up with a plan that Arab leaders accepted on March 4th, in which, that was back on Tuesday, in which Palestinians in Gaza would relocate to mobile homes in safe areas within Gaza while its cities were rebuilt. I didn't know there were safe areas in Gaza. That's good to know. But Hamas, which, think about it, Hamas is the entity that started this war with that October 7th, 2023 attack on Israel. So the plan is to have Hamas cede power to an interim administration of political independence until a reformed Palestinian Authority can assume control. I don't know how that's going to work, but Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas attended the summit, so I assume he's on board with this. I don't know. The plan was endorsed by heads of state and senior officials from the 22-member League of Arab States. Now, the United States and Israel rejected the idea almost immediately. But the Arab proposal doesn't address the reality that Gaza is currently uninhabitable and residents can't humanely live in a territory covered in debris and unexploded ordnance. There's a lot of that laying around. And that was made very clear by White House National Security Council spokesman Brian Hughes, who made a statement to that effect to all the media outlets. Said that President Trump stands by his vision to rebuild Gaza free from Hamas. We look forward to further talks to bring peace and prosperity to the region. See, Israel's foreign ministry, in rejecting the plan, said it failed to address the realities of the situation following the October 7th attack. And that much I know to be true. He said, Hamas' brutal terrorist attack, which resulted in thousands of Israeli deaths and hundreds of kidnappings, is not mentioned, nor is there any condemnation of this murderous terrorist entity. True. Israel also criticized the statement's reliance on the Palestinian Authority and the UNRWA, which is the UN's Palestinian Relief Agency, which it said had previously demonstrated corruption and support for terrorism. Well, duh. Yeah. The Arab statement condemned Israel's latest decision to halt the entry of further aid into Gaza, called for an end to Israeli aggression in the West Bank, which Israelis refer to as Judea and Samaria, and affirmed the vital role of the UNRWA there and in Gaza. Now, Egypt, Jordan, and Gulf Arab states have, for almost a month, been discussing an alternative to Trump's plan, fearing that Trump's plan would destabilize the area. And I can't make any judgment in that regard at this point because I don't understand the prevailing culture over there. On February 4th, in a joint press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, Trump called for relocating the Palestinians from war-torn Gaza to somewhere inhabitable and safe. Now, the United States, he said, would then take on the formidable task of clearing and cleaning up the war's debris and unexploded munitions and redevelop the area as an international resort. Now, that sounds sensible, doesn't it? But those people over there don't want that. They just don't. It's a cultural thing with them. It's probably more than cultural. It's a religious thing. But then again, in that part of the world, culture is religion and vice versa. Now, Egypt and Jordan, which he named as possible destinations for the Palestinians, flatly rejected the idea of accepting them. Can you blame them? I mean, the three-phase plan is spelled out in a 91-page document if you care to read it. It was obtained by the Washington Post, and it ranges from an initial period of clearing debris to more comprehensive reconstruction of communities and infrastructure over a five-year period. And Egypt and Jordan would lead in training a Palestinian police force to enable the Palestinian Authority to return to its governing duties in the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian Authority administered the Gaza Strip until Israel withdrew in 2005 and Hamas won elections in 2006. It has been nothing but chaos ever since. And then the following year, 2007, many remaining Palestinian Authority officials were executed. Some were arrested or expelled by Hamas, but a good many of them were executed. You see, Hamas has no qualms whatsoever about that sort of thing. And Netanyahu has repeatedly said that Israel won't accept the Palestinian Authority, controlled by Abbas's Fatah party, playing a role in post-war Gaza. And I really think the world should be listening to Mr. Netanyahu. Abbas welcomed the plan, announcing an amnesty for long-standing political opponents and promising to hold elections, but how long would something like that hold out? And He suggested, a boss suggested, that this would be the case in the coming year, after not having done so for nearly two decades. Now, boss is 89 years old, but he's still large and in charge over there. He also agreed to appoint a deputy. Yeah, you'd almost have to. But the Egyptian plan doesn't say who would pay to rebuild Gaza, which the UN estimates is going to cost more than $53 billion. The plan would require Gulf and Arab states to commit at least $20 billion to the initial phase. But as I mentioned earlier, I don't understand that culture over there. It's very hard to understand it. There's a prevailing wind of hatred between various groups, Muslim, non-Muslim, Jewish. You have, just within the Muslim community alone, you got the Shiite and the Sunni Muslims, and they're always at each other's throats. I mean, that's a part of the world that I'm afraid has just been destined for nothing but war until this planet of ours stops spinning. It appears to a great degree that Elon Musk and Donald Trump are on the same page on a lot of things. And when it comes to the subject of privatization of the post office, well, looks like they're on the same page there, solidly so. And Musk, who, let's redefine Musk's actual job with the government, okay? He's not technically a government employee. He is a consultant, okay? And he's advising Trump on plans to radically shrink the U.S. government. And you know, if the government of ours, if our government is going to stay afloat, we've got to shrink it. Because if you've looked at any of the financial numbers regarding our government, it is totally unsustainable. You look at our national debt, which is, what is it now, $36 trillion? Is that what that is? Yeah. I mean, it's nuts. We can't continue like that. Nobody can. So Musk wants to shrink the U.S. government. He said as much Wednesday, said that the U.S. Postal Service and passenger railroad Amtrak should be privatized. Now, he was attending a Morgan Stanley conference, and I don't know if he was there in person or if he was there virtually, but he said, I think logically we should privatize anything that can reasonably be privatized. I think we should privatize the post office and Amtrak, for example. We should privatize everything we possibly can. He said he thought those actions would require congressional approval. You know, Amtrak has been government-owned since, what, 1970? And USPS, also government-owned, didn't immediately comment. I didn't expect them to, really. But last month, Trump said he was considering merging the Postal Service with the U.S. Commerce Department, a move that Democrats said would violate federal law. Well, you can always change federal law, you know. But the Postal Service, listen to this, when we get into the numbers, it's very chilling. The Postal Service has lost more than $100 billion since 2007, lost it, including $9.5 billion in the 12 months ending September 30th. Now, earlier this month, they reported a fourth quarter profit of $144 million. Now, where that came from, I have no idea. But as email boomed, the agency's been hurt by an 80% decline in first-class mail volume since 1997. All of it understandable. So that tells me that the Postal Service has failed miserably when it comes to this concept called adapting. I mean, because quite frankly, volumes are now at the lowest level since 1968 with the Postal Service. Now, NBC News added some of their own material to this subject matter. They said Trump advisor and tech mogul Elon Musk suggested Wednesday that the U.S. government should privatize as much as possible and named Amtrak and the U.S. Postal Service as two services ripe for privatization. During a virtual appearance, at the Morgan Stanley Technology Conference, Musk told attendees about his experiences riding bullet trains abroad and said, and we come back to America, like Amtrak is a sad situation. Well, Amtrak really is utilizing, at least when it comes to their hardware, you know, their trains, the tracks, what have you, is utilizing pretty much the same technology that's been in use since the early 20th century. The Pullman cars are a little more luxurious, a little more modernized. And I will say this for the railroads, they've welded those joints, those expansion joints between rails. And wow, you get on a train, you don't have that clackety, 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 clack anymore. That's nice. But Musk said, if you're coming from another country, please don't use our national rail. It can leave you with a very bad impression of America. So I think we should prioritize anything that can be privatized. Ownership structures of high-speed rails abroad, well, they vary. Some are fully state-owned, like in China. Others, like Japan's railways, have been largely privatized. And the European system is mixed. But if you're going to look at a model, a business model for a rail system for passenger rail, I think you need to look at Japan. Quick reminder, tomorrow night when you go to bed, set your clocks ahead 1 hour. We are going back to daylight saving time. Thank God. All right, let's go over to the comedy corner. Joe DeVito is back.
I'm trying to stay healthy. I'm back at the gym. I am so sore right now. How long are you supposed to rest between workouts? Because it was 6 years. I felt like that should have... I can't recover! I can't, and I know it. I went into my gym, and they put up these motivational posters to frighten you into having a good workout. And they put up a new one by the squat rack. It said, go heavy or go home. Yeah, so I went heavy. Should have gone home. I went to do my squats. I went all the way down, and I remained there. I couldn't get back up. I had to crawl out from under the bar. It's humiliating, because the guys at the gym saw. They made a big noise, and there's things you want to hear those guys say. You want to hear things like, you got it, all you. You don't want to hear things like, are you okay, sir? Do you need us to call someone? Are you wearing a special bracelet, sir? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Of course, right next to me, some big gorilla in the next squat rack had 600 pounds on the bar. He looked at me and he said, can you give me a spot? I don't like how you laughed at that already. I told him, I said, I don't even think I could slow that down if something went wrong. I said, the best I can do is try and talk you out of it. And I did. He went home. We actually left. And I got something to eat. But the way your body turned... I went to get my teeth cleaned. I thought I was going to be in and out a couple minutes. No problem. They wouldn't let me leave. First, the dentist and her physician's assistant, whatever they call them, their little henchwoman there. They come in with this tray of tools like I'm in a muffler shop. She's working in my mouth, poking and scraping and jabbing and sticking all these things in there. And then when she's done, she said... I noticed a little bleeding in your gums. Have you noticed any bleeding recently? I said, how recently do you mean? Because everything was fine when I came in. Before you started stabbing me in the face. That little ice pick. I have a tooth that's moving around right up front. That's what you, anybody here under 40 has that to look forward to. Just one day a random tooth says, oh, time to take a trip around your face. There. Dentist saw that. She said, I noticed you have a little crowding. That's what she called it, crowding. Like my face is a bus stop. Notice you have a little crowding. Have you ever thought about braces? Yeah, thought about them all the time. When I had them. When I was 12 years old. Well, you're going to need braces again. Again? Twice in one lifetime? No. So I refuse to be balding and have a retainer at the same time.
Yeah, he's good. Get out there and have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on Monday's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time this weekend just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?